Okay, it is 12:30 on May 17th, 2024. This interview is being conducted at the Post 79, which is the New Philadelphia Post, Tuscararas Post on East High Street, New Philadelphia, Ohio. Present for this interview is from the Ohio State Highway Patrol and his attorney, Lathan Lipperman. Also present is BCI Special Agent John Tingley and BCI Special Agent Eric Lanehart. I understand that you have conferred with your attorney since the that time, and you are now prepared to give statement concerning your involvement in and or knowledge of the incident that took place that we're going to discuss. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And earlier today, Attorney Lipperman sent me a copy of a statement that you provided to him that you guys worked on together, I presume. And I believe you have a copy of that statement in front of you at this point in time. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Do you know of any changes or additions or any deletions that you need to make to that before we talk today?
Just to note that the statement that I sent you earlier didn't have the number of rounds fired, but we now have that in the written statement.
Very good. So we have an addition of the number of rounds fired. And when you did the statement, was that statement voluntarily done by you?
Yes, sir.
And are you here voluntarily today to talk to us?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And before we leave today, we will we'll have you sign one of those copies so we have it for our records. And then anything that we have, we did talk about the demographic sheet that we fill out, and we did cover some of that stuff prior to turning the tape recorder on. What we have in front of us on the table for the record is the criminal investigation notification that was signed by you and by me. We have copies of your written statement for your referral, and then we also have a couple of images of overheads from Google Earth of the location, which I believe is Snyder's Crossing and Interstate 77, that we can refer to if we need to. So just for full disclosure, statement was 14 pages in length. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And in order not to read that statement, what we're going to have you do is, and please refer back to that if you need to refer back to it. But I am taking that statement as the official response or your official statement of the incident that happened. And I know it has dates and times and things like that. But I think for the benefit of all of us, and for the follow-up questions that we may have, why don't you, if you can, to the best of your knowledge, tell us from the time you were notified of this situation going on, and I think in your statement you had mentioned like it was around 1:45, you had gotten some radio traffic. So we know that part. So tell us what happened from once you showed up on scene, and just I'm going to let you kind of narrate your own and just kind of tell us what you remember. And if you don't remember, you know, we'll refer back to your notes and we'll go from there. So why don't you start there and kind of tell us what you recall?
Well, once I arrived on scene, I was met by a, and he just started to give me a kind of briefing of what was going on, but is that you think the guy is possibly impaired. He's not getting a whole lot of information. I believe he told me at that time he was DUP, he was driving under suspension, and just really not, he's just acting weird. So I go up, and Trooper Day was speaking to him as I walked up. As I made contact with an individual, I introduced myself and just started asking him, you know, what was going on, just trying to build a rapport and trying to figure out what was going on, what we had. He was, as I approached the vehicle, he was very paranoid right off the rip. I could see that he was looking around, his eyes just very wide, and was concerned with what everything was going on around him. He didn't want to answer very many questions. He was very quiet. As I was talking with him, again, like I said, he was paranoid. I asked him if he was injured, if he needed any medical attention, because he was rubbing his left leg, left shin, calf area, and had his right hand underneath his left thigh. And I asked him, are you hurt? Do you need medical attention? What answer? I asked him if there was any weapons in the car. We need to know about just for our safety and his. Really didn't answer. Asked him again. Just told him, hey, we need to know. He says, everyone's safe. Never gives a definitive answer. It's like, everyone's safe. I'm like, okay, well, tells me there's probably something. So I tell him, I'm like, hey, it's a, I need to see your hands. Can you keep your hands up on the steering wheel? Just in that way. And he's like, we went through that for, I don't know, a couple minutes trying to get him to do that. And he's like, well, if you just step back. He's very polite the whole time. He's like, just can you, I'm like, well, if I step back, I need you to put your hands where I can see them. I said, you do that for me, and I'll do that for you. Okay. So he did. Put his hands at the bottom of the steering wheel, kind of like here and here, if I remember, one at the bottom, kind of that day, left hand, at like the 10, 9 o'clock. So, it's like, all right. And he kept him there for most of the time. Tried again to give us the keys. He never wanted to give us. He would act like it, and then he'd start shaking, and he's constantly rocking, smoking a vape, and smoking Black and Mild, like chain smoking hardcore, and just asking if he needs medical attention, if he's hurt again, and he said, yeah. So I was like, all right, so we called for a squad. That's when Dover Fire eventually showed up. Keep asking him, what's going on, where he's coming from. He had told me that he was coming from Akron, and he's from Dayton. He told Trooper Spencer Day and that. We asked him if he had family up there. He said he was seeing friends in Akron. So somewhere along the way, I asked him if he was wanting to hurt himself, if he had any thoughts of hurting himself. And he said, yeah. And I said, all right, well, I said, I need to know if there's weapons in the car. I'm like, we don't care if there are. We just need to, know for our safety when the fire department gets here. Like, they're going to need to know what's going on. And at that time, he looks to his right and, like, looks for a minute. So we start scanning with, I start scanning with my flashlight. At that time, I don't see anything over the passenger seat and forward. He looks back and comes back forward, hastens forward and says, everyone's safe. And so we need to know. He says, everyone's safe. Okay. So the squad gets there. Thought maybe they could build a rapport with him. They're talking to him. He doesn't really want to give him any information. He's like, well, I'll drive to the hospital. We're like, well, no, we're not going to do that. Like, that's, we need the keys. And he kept saying, can you just step back? Just step back. Like, all right, well, we're giving you something. You need to, work with us here. And he's still shaking his head and rocking and wild-eyed. And, couldn't get anywhere in these. So I send Trooper Day and kind of the back of his truck, and he's paranoid what they're doing. And then eventually I send them back to the back of their cruisers, even farther back, and he's still paranoid looking around, like, what? He's like, they're coming up. He starts saying, like, he's like, there's somebody over in the field, they're coming up. I'm like, what do you see? Like, he's like, there's somebody coming up. I'm telling you, man, like, there's nobody, like, there's two troops back there, and it's, shit, how many firefighters there were than me at that time. So this is us right here. Like, we're, and at that time I made the decision to have a trooper day. Well, let me back up. I requested for a sergeant at one point, to get a sergeant on scene, because we didn't have one out that night. I was a senior guy out for our shift. So I asked our dispatch to call our sergeant. Well, we shared radios. We dispatched for Zanesville Post, and we only had one dispatcher, so our radios were patched together so they could hear, we can hear each other's radio traffic, and we're set up that way. Well, I'd overheard what was going on, and he asked for me to give him a call. At that time, I yelled back to said, I can't do that right now. I said, give him a call. Call him for me. I don't know if he'd called him. I'm assuming because... So he ends up... I didn't know he was ever en route until I heard him signal out. I said, oh my gosh, okay, I guess he's here. But that was about an hour sometime afterwards. So anyway, I send Spencer on the other side of the interstate. There's a Marathon gas station. I said, go stage over there. If I need you, I'll call you. Like, it's just, this dude's freaking out. Like, we're good. And I called for a CIT officer to respond, because I talked to him probably at that point for an hour or so, and I wasn't, and I felt like I exhausted everything that I knew to do, and I was hoping somebody with CIT training, the 40-hour course, that they might know something or think of something different that I was not doing at the time. So, at that time, I was notified that the SO was going to send somebody, and that's when arrived on scene, and he starts talking to him, trying to build a rapport with this guy, and we end up having the squad, the fire department, medics, they go back into their ambulance, and we ask them, like, hey, can you just go and just basically shut down the turn lane for the ramp? That way we're blocked, we have somewhat protection from traffic. And that's when I just started talking. Like, we're trying to get this guy to get out of the car. And we'd get him to dangle the keys out the window, then he'd just pull him back and start rocking. And he was just like, no, no, no. And he would never give us any information and never truly comply with the what we're trying to get him to do. He would ask us to step back. We'd step back. We'd ask him to drop keys out. He wouldn't drop the keys. So anyway, that goes on for a couple hours. And by the time when shows up, he gets Lieutenant Molly Harris from us, for the Highway Patrol. She's in charge of our, the mental health side of our everything for the patrol right now. She's the one that heads up everything. So he had her on the phone. He let me know. She's talking to her, so I come back, and I talked to her for a little bit and explained to everything and what we had going on. We had offered him, I got him the number for the crisis center up in Canton. Got him that number. He acted like he was going to call, but never did. And we, like I said, I explained everything to her, what we did. I did notify Intel, or I asked our dispatcher to notify Intel to do a workup on him to see if we could get a family members, maybe see on social media, if there's anything unusual that might have been put out there, or get family that we could contact to get a hold of him. So, again, told her all that, and she's like, well, I think you guys exhausted everything. She's like, I hate to tell you this, but you're probably going to have to go hands-on, because it's starting to get closer to daylight. people coming in for work, the ramp's starting to pick up. We're like, yeah, we're trying to avoid all things we don't. And prior to that, talking to her, our dispatcher was like, hey, can you check your NCT for my message? And I checked it and talked to it. Yeah, it is. Some of his previous criminal history of aggravated menacing, resisting, OVI, weapons, improper handling weapons in the vehicle, stalking charges, like maybe an assault or something here. And I, yep, I saw it, good. And I come up and tell, kind of get my down and dirty, like, hey, this place is occurring. So, and while we're talking to him, he's smoking all these cigarettes and vapes and cigars. We're like, hey, we'll get you more stuff, man. Like, give us something. We get out of the car. We'll get you more cigarettes, like, and whatever you want. Like, you're not in trouble. Like we don't care about any, like, the traffic, we don't care about, like, whatever. You suspended. We'll not worry about it. We just want to get you help. Basically, get out, walk to this freaking squad, go get help, and we'll worry about everything else down the road. And never really showed any emotion the whole time. So it gets to the point when I tell him, like, hey man, you got 5 minutes, like, I'm gonna set an alarm on my phone. 5 minutes up, we're basically gonna have to take you out of this. Like, we don't want to, we're not trying to do that, but this is what, we can't let this keep going on. We've already been out here for 3 hours, whatever it was at the time. So I set my alarm, started on my, and it's going, and that's when dispatch is like, hey, we got a caregiver, Benita, I believe her name is. I thought it was Benita is what he was saying, but it was Benita. It's a caregiver. He's like, tell him she's going to give him a call. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, hey, do you know her? He's like, I don't recall if he said he did or not, but so she's going to be able to call. Sees the phone light up, declined. And he calls him out on it. He's like, hey, I just saw the phone light. He's like, why aren't you? He's like, I don't know that number. That's not her. He's like, that's not. And we're like, yes, it is. Like, we're telling you, like, this phone's going to ring, and it's going to be her. Like, answer the damn phone. Like, and again, see the phone light up, decline. So I told her, I'm like, all right, we'll have her call back in, or call her back, and we'll connect her through, and I'll have her speak through my phone. That's what we do, and she starts talking to him, and she says, you know, you were talking on Tuesday that you needed help, and you wanted to get help. She's like, just, you're not in trouble, get out, just step out. And she's like, you know, your mom wouldn't want you doing this. And then he starts crying. Back up to before that, I'm sorry. I asked him, I was like, hey, before we got her on the phone, that's when I was like, hey, man, I was like, I'm getting tired, and I'm sure you're getting tired. What about, like, what if we get you some donuts and coffee? Like, you know, you like that stuff? And he's, yeah. I was like, that is the first time he was like, yeah, he smiled and was like, shit, it might be making somewhere. Like, so I called, said, hey, give me some donuts and coffee. I don't care where it comes from. Just give me some stuff. He's like, all right. So he brings it up, and that's when I put it on the, he said, put it in the front of the hood, the front of the car, and step back. I'm like, all right, hey, we did this for you. You need to, and that's when I said, hey, you got 5 minutes. Like, we're done. Like, we're getting to the point where we have to, and get back to where she's talking to him. He's not really responding to it. He's emotional. So I told her, I was like, hey, I'm going to sit you down for a second. We're going to keep talking to him. And eventually I'm like, all right, we'll call you back. So I hung up on her, or disconnected the phone call. And we kept explaining to him, hey, we just need you to get out of the car. Walk over here, give you these donuts, you're good. Like, we're done with you at this point. Like, go get your help, she'll come pick you up, you're done. The squad actually then pulled up beside us. So we're like, hey, look, they're even right here. Like, you don't have to walk that far. Like, it. So he starts to open the door, just a couple inches, and then shut it. So I looked around, I'm at the A pillar looking in, and to my right, and he's more in the doorway of the truck. When he starts to open the door, I grab the door and open it. So he does. We're like, hey, the door's open. Like, it's the hard part's done. Just step on out here, and let's get you everything that you need. And he's like, no. And like leans back, and like kind of just like starts sucking more on his vape and cigars and stuff. And we're like, no, you have to get out. Like, we're going to, like, if we put hands on you, unfortunately, you're going to get put handcuffs in. Because I both knew if we, like, it was going to be a freaking knockout fight with this dude. And, so, we're like, you need to get out of this freaking truck. Like, this is easy now. Like, you're getting donuts and coffee and just walk over there. Like, we don't, and while we're talking, and goes to grab him to get him, to pull him out, well, he tenses up and puts his right hand behind his back, and we start like, hey, we need to, like, don't do anything, like, I need to start seeing your hands, like, we need to see your hands. So it starts getting amped up. I drew my taser out in hopes that would be enough to maybe reset him to where I don't want, trying to use the least amount of force possible and try and get this dude out. And you can just see his face just get, like, he's, like, even more, like, zoned out, and his eyes are bigger, and he's looking around, and just almost like an animal that was, like, just trapped, or, just trying to find its way out. And he has it there by his hands. Like, we need to see your freaking hands, dude. Like, don't do anything dumb. Like, so I have my taser on him, still to my right, from what I recall. Judge at the back of the truck, on the passenger side. I yelled up to him. I said, hey, come up and tell me what you freaking, like, tell me what you see. Like, we can't see anything over there. So he comes up, and he's looking, and he uses a flashlight, and he yells out 61, which is our code for gun. So I transition to my pistol, throw my flashlight down, throw my pistol out, and we're still yelling at him, and as I'm moving around the truck, I see him come across with a silver pistol across his waist like this. So that's when I engaged, and so did the other troops, and I started moving back towards the vehicle. I actually ended up going back towards the engine block of the ambulance. And then they floor it and they back up, and I moved back to my cruiser. What'd you see? I was like, I saw a fucking gun. Like, and he's like, what else? I'm like, he's not moving. I was like, he's dead. at that time, I put out shots fired after I, engaged, and then Trooper Day arrived on scene while we're at the back of our cruiser, my cruiser, and the deputies, but we backed up probably like 2 hours prior to that. Once Spencer and left, I pulled my cruiser up to them, actually was being right behind them. I kicked my overheads and my takedowns out at one point in hopes to help, but he didn't like that, so then I just had my headlights. I went back and switched headlights. It lit up well enough to be able to see, but that's why my car would have been right behind the very first car. So then jump ahead, and then I start to pie up around, giving commands like, let me see your hands. As I get up the car, he slumped over, and I get down, or I go up to the A-pillar again with for coverage, while the deputies go up and extract. Well, one of the deputies removes the weapon from his hand, because when we get up there, the pistol's still in his hand, fingering the trigger well. So they remove that, they get him out, get him on the ground, secure him, and start assessing immediately. Then I don't know if I right then I start process the weapon just to clear it out and everything. Then there was a spent casing in the revolver. I don't know when that was fired, if at us, but there's a spent casing in there. You could see where there's primer strike on the back. Then I yelled to have the squad come up, and why are we doing this? Like, when we have a squad actually here, they can do it, and they come up, they start treating, assessing, doing what they need to. We start making notifications for our side, I'm sure the sheriff's office did the same thing, and then we secured the scene and set up everything.
Okay, so I think you can agree with me then that pretty stressful situation.
Yes.
Over the course of a number of hours from what you just explained.
Yes, sir.
And obviously it's somewhat emotional and stressful to recall that to us. So I want to pause for a minute from that narrative. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you on these two photos that I took from Google, and I know this one's probably worthless to us, but if you can, at least so I know, because I wasn't out there. And the gas station's indicated, I believe right there. If you can just put up like an X on where this took place. So that's, you're marking what the
southbound ramp, exit 85 southbound.
So, correct me if I'm wrong. So he was on, more than likely, he was on 77 at some point.
Yes.
And was exiting off to the east side. Is that the east side?
No, it's
the west.
West side ramp, okay. On to Snyder's Crossing.
Yes.
Okay. And kind of parlaying that, help me understand, because I'm lost in translation here, and I know it's probably in your statement, but if you can tell me, did this start off as a patrol stop, or was this a county?
I'm sorry. It was a disabled vehicle stop that Trooper Day stopped out with, because he had, I don't know if he just took the exit, I'm not sure how he pulled up on it, but he sees the vehicle pulled over. He's actually halfway in the roadway still. So he is a hazard. He's split in the fog line, the white line on the side of the road. And so that's how the initial contact was, as a disabled vehicle call, or stop, not call.
Okay. I'm sorry, who is the trooper?
Trooper Day, Spencer Day.
Okay. So as I'm sitting here listening to your recollection of the events that happened, there was a couple of things that I want to kind of go back and revisit, if we can. And if you know these answers, you do, and if you don't, just tell me you don't know, that's fine. Sometimes we don't know the answers, but you had made a couple of mentions of some things I want to kind of retouch on. This Lady Benita, or this family member, you had mentioned that she had, as she was kind of talking with the subject, she had mentioned that, apparently in a previous conversation, he had mentioned to her that he wanted to get some help. At any time, did they talk about what type of help he was seeking? Or since this incident, have you had a chance to find any of that out through any research of your own?
I know there's the workup from our intel section. I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And this is going to be way out of chronological order, so I apologize. So the folks that are going to be listening to this tape later, and for the benefit of all of us in the room here today, you had mentioned that when you transitioned from less than lethal to your service pistol and you had dropped your flashlight, that is, from my understanding of briefing through your statement, that's because your duty weapon has a light on it. Is that correct?
It does.
Okay. Can you explain what type of light that is and where it's mounted on your weapon?
It's a Streamlight TLR-7A or something, a weapon mounted light at the very bottom of the frame of the pistol.
Was that being used to illuminate the...
It wasn't on.
It wasn't on?
No. Okay.
So how was the lighting for you?
We had overhead lighting from the traffic lights, but I was still able from my lighting from the cruise and everything, I was still able to see well enough into the cab of the truck as he transitioned and brought the pistol.
But it was nighttime, right?
Yes, it was about 5 a.m. in the morning.
Okay.
But at that time, the squad was towards the back bumper, so those headlights
right.
would have been on that area as well, correct?
They would have been. Okay.
But lighting is limited.
Yes.
Because of the time of day and the situation of that, right? Okay. So you mentioned that throughout your recollection of the situation here, you've mentioned a couple of things, that this initially he was, kind of messing around with his left leg or his left calf area of his leg. And you had mentioned at one point he was showing like no emotion. And I think that one of the, if I quote you correctly, he had like his eyes seemed to be wild, and you even mentioned it at a certain point that almost like a caged animal trying to get out. His face was zoned out. So you've been in law enforcement a long time, and you have a lot of training and experience in the years that you have. Has there ever been a time, maybe not to this magnitude, but has there ever been a time where you've ran into other people who have acted similar to this? Or why does this be, well, let me, I don't want to get too many ahead. Have you ran into situations with other folks or other calls that you've had similar type, been approached or been in front of situations or a subject that's been acting like this?
Yes, I mean, not, I can't recall if it's of this magnitude of, but I've had people that are just a very blank face, and just you can tell that there's something, let's see, they're having a mental episode at the time to where they're maybe just not fully operating at their max capacity, to where something is hindering their, to where they're just not in the right state of mind.
In your training and your knowledge and your experience, have you ran across other subjects or other motorists or other stops where people have not wanted to comply
yes.
with your
yes.
commands? What made this different?
Just as well, how he was not wanting to truly answer anything. Never wanted to truly answer if there was any weapons in the car. Sometimes you just get a weird vibe of like how things are. And I mean, shortly after speaking with him, you could tell that there was something like not completely right there. It was just, I don't know if it's spidey sense, but.
So on two different occasions during your recollection, you had mentioned that, well, let me go back here just real quick. You witnessed him when I believe you had stated that you asked him about weapons in the car and immediately looked to the passenger side of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that significant to you?
Because people always look to, people have the tendency to look to something that's, they know is not allowed on drug. You ask somebody if they have drugs or anything like that. They'll typically look and kind of give away their what they have, and then they're like, oh, I didn't end up there. They're gonna almost give you an indicator of where something is or if there's something in the car. Because if you stop, you know, an older lady, if they're what's in the car, no. Like, you know, but you stop somebody that knows that they have something they're not supposed to have, it's kind of like a kid where they're going to give away that, they're going to tattle on themselves, I guess. When he did that, I knew that there was something in that car. Where it was exactly, I didn't know, but just how hard he looked, and I guess he didn't remember where it was. I don't know why. I guess he can't turn his head all the way around, but it's his place. But.
Have you ran, during your experience in your training, have you ran across any situations on any, whether it was with the police department previously or the patrol now, that anybody has ever mentioned the statement, everyone's safe?
That's the first I've ever heard that, like that.
At that point in time, when you're in the middle of this, can you explain to me, how does that register with you when somebody says that?
They're just to me that they're not wanting to be honest and say that, yeah, there is something in the car. That they're just being very vague in hopes that basically we'll leave them alone about that subject.
Strange behavior?
It is strange, yes. It's abnormal.
You haven't ran across it before?
No, not to my recollection.
And in those events where you've had other motorists or other folks that you're dealing with, whether they're walking or out of cars or in cars, those that have been non-compliant, have you, just from your recollection, have those turned out to where they comply eventually, or do you have some that don't comply and you have to go hands-on, or is it a mix of?
It's a mix of both. I mean, it depends on, I guess, depends on the person, I guess, how much they want to. Usually everybody ultimately winds up coming to comply with what we want without having to get a use force. I mean, there's always those individuals that don't want to. They're dead set on. In this case, he was just not wanting to do what we wanted.
But at some point, you told us that, you know, you gave him 5 minutes and mm-hmm. you shut your phone. Is that a point where you believe that?
That was our, like, red line to where we had to, because with traffic starting to pick up, it was becoming a safety hazard for everybody there, that we dealt with them for 4 hours or whatever it was at that time, and we exhausted all options. He wasn't wanting to comply with what we wanted. We had did more than, I mean, try to get him to do what we wanted, so it was to the point where we were going to have to, unfortunately, have to go to force if we had to.
So after the engagement happens, and everybody kind of takes cover to kind of assess, mm-hmm. Was it the fire department that ends up rendering aid to him immediately, or is it?
It was the deputies. They started to assess for wounds. We called Trooper Hagee, yelled to Spencer to go grab his med kit. He goes back and grabs that. I think I remember seeing a deputy running up with either an IFAC or a med kit or something. But then I was like, I gathered myself for a second. I'm like, why the heck are we going? Like, not that we can't, but it's like we actually have squad, like, right here. Like, they're the professionals in this case. So, and then we yelled to them or waved them up or whatever, and they came up and they jumped in and started taking care of business and that. So.
Does the patrol train its staff in situations like this, or is this something that you have never really, to this magnitude, not ever really dealt with?
I mean, we get training in dealing with people going through a mental crisis. we have some people that are CIT certified. We do the, I believe it's care training, what it's called. So yeah, we do, and then we'll do during our in-service, there'll be different scenarios over the course of time. I can't recall if we've done a mental one or not, but.
Any previous encounters with this person?
Yes, sir.
Any knowledge of, so no previous encounters, so you didn't have any knowledge of him other than the time of the incident?
Yes, sir.
Talk about your Axon or your videos, mm-hmm. just real quick. Have you watched your body cam at all?
I did.
Okay. About how many times have you reviewed it?
Twice.
Was that by yourself or with supervision?
With my attorney, and then just once last night for this morning.
And just to jump in and clarify, yeah. Since your video was 5 hours, did you watch the entire thing?
No, I watched just the end. The shooting aspect. Okay. It's 3-5 minutes.
So your recollection of what you're watching, or you're watching the video, and your recollection of the events that transpired, are they primarily similar?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Was there anything you noticed that different watching the video kind of after the fact that was different than what your memory of the event actually was? That's probably a horrible question or a roundabout.
I know what you're asking. I think I do. Don't recall until I watched the video, like when I backed up, like I said during speaking with you, I went to the engine block of the ambulance. I didn't recall that until I saw the video. I thought it was more, I was on the passenger side, but, other than some things I said, I feel like it was pretty accurate for the most part.
Do you feel and maybe you've experienced this before, but in high stress situations, we look back at auditory and visual exclusion type stuff. Is that what you're kind of explaining to me, that you thought you were...
For the movement?
Yeah, for that movement.
I guess it would be... At the time, I perceived it as I was would have been still a state on the passenger side of the ambulance, but in reality, I actually kind of went to the engine block and then... Because I was when him and I were watching, I was like, "Oh."
Do you recall how many shots you fired?
I don't.
And just to clarify, the statement says 6-7, and that's primarily based on the round count BCI did after the fact, obviously.
Because we believe there's a discrepancy on whether the gun or whether the magazine was topped off, right? The 17 or 17 plus one.
Right.
All right. Yeah. Do you believe or do you know who was the first to engage the subject?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Subject's weapon, I think you mentioned in your statement, you kind of initially took custody of it, cleared it, and put it in a bag, or how did you,
yes.
Do you recall that?
Yes. Yeah, it was on, the deputies took it when they extracted him out of the car. I think they put it on the hood of my car, but ultimately that's where I did it on my cruiser, in front of the camera, close to my body cam. Cleared it out and put everything in bags.
Other than your attorney, have you spoke to anybody else about the incident?
Just my wife.
Okay. Anybody, any of the others that were involved other than that since the night of the on scene? Does the patrol during these incidents have you do your analysis or anything like that?
No.
No? Okay. We talked about auditory, visual exclusion. Do you... I'm not going to ask that. But, while I'm leafing through here, Counselor, do you have anything you would like to add?
No, I think you, I guess I'll just reiterate for the record, you alluded to this earlier, Seth obviously provided a high-level summary of all the events that happened, but given the fact he was out there with the suspect, I think 3.5-4 hours, I think he was on the scene for a total of 5 hours, you know, that there may be some differences in what he's recalling now, but the statement is going to be an accurate reflection of his recollection to the best of his knowledge.
Agent Tingley?
Nothing.
Who's your immediate supervisor?
Sergeant Jen Makers.
Is that Sergeant, you say?
Yes.
Can you, do you know how to spell his last name?
Her.
Oh.
M-A-K-R-I-S.
What's her first name?
Jennifer.
Okay.
M-A-K-R-I-S. Her unit number is 1990.
That's on the demographic sheet. Okay, so before we, we'll have him, because this is a copy of a copy, right?
Yeah, I think that's the one you may have brought.
Yeah, that's the one, because it doesn't have
the round count.
So if you want to just leaf through to make sure there's the 14 pages are there and it's a accurate representation before you sign it. Anything that we did not cover that you think we need to cover?
I don't believe so, sir.
That may or may not be in your official statement here. You have my card?
Yes, sir.
There. I try not to go to the office, so my mobile phone is the best way to get a hold of me. There's reasons I don't go to the office, but other than that, so you're, Agent Tingley's good?
I'm good.
Counselor, you're good?
I'm good.
Okay. This will conclude the audio recording at 1:17. End of recording.